This is Michael with Moonark Snipes. We have an AMA here with Silo. I'm just wondering if you guys could introduce yourself and your experience.
Cool, I'll start. My name's Solv Maxwell. Been in the crypto space for quite a while, introduced to Bitcoin in 2011, found Ethereum in 2015. Just started getting my hands dirty after 2015, really, is when I kind of dove in more full time, and have had a couple of different companies in the, you know, what they would call now Web3 space. Including like a proof of stake mining operation, running master nodes, and had that as like a corporation and offered investors exposure to master nodes through common stock. Then, you know, more recently built a Web3 company, like investing in NFT projects and token launches and, you know, building bots and providing liquidity to various decentralized protocols and exchanges and yield farming and such. And then last year, early fall, I guess, we were just like looking at our portfolio of NFTs and just really decided to get more into the development side. We had a bunch of ideas that we wanted to flesh out and see which one would be, you know, what we wanted to bring to the table, but we certainly saw like a void in a certain area and really wanted to see if we could deliver there. And so that's what we've been working on lately, but it's a little bit about my background, and I'll let PV go next.
Hey everybody, some of you guys might know me, been around the Moonark space from the very beginning. I am also a partner at Web3 firm that Solv mentioned. I focus more on the technical side of thing as well as building relationships. Specifically with this project, I've been doing a lot of networking in addition to helping the other guys steer the ship in the background. We're really excited to share Silo with you. We've been working on it for quite a long time. Probably have spent more time on this than the majority of NFT project teams tend to do. We have a pretty fantastic team. We'll get into introducing the rest of them later and giving you guys some background. But that's me. You can call me Al. I'm the technical arm of the team.
Awesome. Nice to meet you, Al. I've known about you. I just didn't know your name was Al. Cool. So are you able to tell us about Silo? What is Silo? What are you guys doing? An NFT or a token, or like, what is Silo about?
Yeah, sure. I'll step in there. So we wanted to create a three-dimensional avatar project for in metaverse play and play to earn games that are compatible with what we're building, and augmented reality platforms. And kind of where that spun out is we were pretty interested in, well, we were holding some three-dimensional avatar projects and they were extremely low, like polygon count. So not something I saw as something that would be long-term interesting, you know, for the space. Like take Mebits, for example, being a really low polygon count, looking like it came out of Minecraft. And then I, you know, came to find out after like diving into that the high polygon count stuff like is pretty challenging to present in a metaverse environment when the metaverse environment is focused on like what's called voxel. So we wanted to produce something that was really high quality art and something that had a really in-depth storyline where people could actually like relate to characters and get behind it. And so we started thinking pretty big right from the beginning. We said, well, what if we started like the next big sci-fi franchise, but it was born from NFTs? And so that was to kick it off. The first product was these three-dimensional avatars with these different characters and really intense backstories that all interwove together. And then we thought, well, okay, if we're going to go that big with the vision, like we should be responsible and bring something to the table That's like an example for other companies. So think like B Corporation or something like that. So we decided to focus the storyline on shedding a positive light on psilocybin, and that it's interwoven into the entire storyline. And for the purposes of our story, it is how you enter the metaverse, or, you know, it's analogous to expanding your consciousness, let's say. So that was the general idea. And then, of course, it's developed a lot since then. You know, we hired a copywriter. We have a team of 18 people as of today. We have, you know, onboarded an advisor, the head of research from Cointelegraph, so the largest crypto publication there is, and just started like really focusing on what is a professional approach to a long-term NFT project, and how do you build this so people actually want to use it in the metaverse platforms, especially the ones that are going to be utilizing Unreal Engine, for example. I'll pause there just for a second.
You're good. You're good. Yeah, I'm just looking at the artwork here. This is absolutely beautiful. So what you're saying is that you're creating not only a very high definition NFT project, but you're also incorporating kind of a storyline that people can follow throughout and kind of identify characters within that storyline. That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I always like hesitate to go in depth on the storyline because it's just, it is in fact that it's extremely deep, but, you know, I'll give a general overview essentially because it's definitely my favorite part of the project itself, even though the art is absolutely incredible, you know. And just to touch on that, we hired, you know, a friend of mine out in Los Angeles, my buddy Gurmukh, he is considered one of the top 100 three-dimensional designers in the world, or top 100 most influential 3D designers in the world. Worked for Star Citizen, which was the second largest crowdfunded event of all time. It was the first until EOS had their, you know, ICO that lasted a year. I'm sure many of you were around for that. And when EOS closed its round, it had successfully crowdfunded more than the largest previous crowdfunding event, Star Citizen. But that's the significance there. There's just a massive thing. And so Gurmukh was, you know, a creative lead on those, on some of those ships and really interesting works there. So I reached out to him and said, look, there's these ideas for this story, and I think like you're perfect for it. And, you know, he jumped on the opportunity. So we're lucky to have him. But hiring the copywriter and really like figuring out this storyline, having sessions, just deep, you know, multi-hour long sessions over and over again, kind of designing where we wanted to go with this and tying the characters in together was really fascinating. So in one way, you have Silo, which is a planet, which used to be Earth. And we'll get to why it's called Silo here shortly. But essentially, on that planet, you have droids. And droids are basically what you could imagine is the evolution, the natural evolution of humankind. So we essentially build this AI. Robots become really, really incredible. And eventually, we are kind of useless to them. And also the planet, you know, with global warming, starts, polar ice caps are melting. It gets covered in water. It becomes really, really inhabitable by human beings. So we just kind of fade into the background and become extinct. And AI runs the planet now. And they start building all this incredible technology on top of the planet. And then you get introduced to the hero of our story, which is the Tavali. So that's the feline character. And the Tavali is the evolution of felines. So you can think, if you're familiar with stoned ape theory, how the you know, humans came to be from apes, like roaming the planet, becoming more and more conscious. And one of the reasons that they could have become more conscious is literally picking psilocybin off the ground and having this like neurogenesis effect and then becoming more and more conscious and eventually evolving into humans. So the same thing happened to felines a couple of thousand years before it happened to apes, right? And with that, you know, scenario, the Tavali is the result of that, like an evolved feline species. And they used to actually live on Silo, and they called it Silo because they had been accessing the psilocybin network. And then, so they become super conscious, they build some incredible technology, AKA the pyramids, all of ancient Egypt. And then they take off from this planet. And then they run into the like evil character or the villain of the story, which is the galactic gangsters known as the Helaman, which is a reptilian creature. So you start to notice that there's a lot of tie-ins to what could actually happen, and also tie-ins to what's happening with the US government, for example, and with crypto, Web3, right? Like each one of these characters kind of relate to something that's happening within the crypto space. I'll pause there for a minute.
You're good. That's it makes people really attached to the kind of the NFTs versus just trying to collect them, you know. I'm just curious, how do you guys plan on so you're explaining the storyline to me. How do you guys plan on bringing the storyline to the average user? Will it be like a book or like a comic book, etc.? And do you guys plan on having like updates throughout it, like a weekly update or a monthly update, where you continue to grow this storyline and maybe attach these NFTs to it and possibly create a new set of NFTs moving forward if it continues to grow, something like that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, actually. So of course, we're building, you know, if you think about what we're actually building, we're one step, you know, removed from that. We take a step back, and then Silo is this incredible NFT or sci-fi, you know, adventure that we're starting with NFTs. But you can kind of think of our approach as like more of along the lines of an artifact. Like, we are developing things for the metaverse, and we are starting with Silo, and Silo is the main focus, the main product, right? And then we're very you know, interested in not simply diluting the project by releasing more and more collections. So we want to build in a lot of utility, and we're really inspired by Doodles. And just for, you know, being DeFi users ourselves, we're familiar with like token wrapping, using, you know, wrapping smart contracts. So what we are interested in doing is allowing the holders of the NFT to wrap their NFT into a new scenario that gives them new utility in other types of environments. So that could be in metaverse environments or in play-to-earn environments, even in augmented reality environments, where you're able to wrap your initial NFT into a new version of it. Maybe it's in a vehicle, maybe it's you know, flying, maybe it's doing something else, but it has new utility because of you wrapped it. And the reason that you do that is, instead of us releasing a 20,000 collection next or whatever with all these various assets, you know, instead we allow that NFT holder just to get additional utility by wrapping instead of like having to buy something else. And that isn't to say we won't release future products that could be bolt-ons and then maybe wrap those two things into another environment as well. So there's a lot of different directions we can go, but we're definitely focused on not diluting the original and initial collection.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the best option to do it, just because if you want people to be attached to this, it's kind of, you want just enough that they're connected to it, and you can kind of build it slowly if need be versus just continuous dilution. So I really like that you're doing kind of that aspect.
Before you ask the next question, I just wanted to, I remembered something you said, which was, you know, a book. And so there is, you know, something in the works. We haven't like talked about it or announced it. We've definitely talked about it, just not announced it. And one of those things is something that I'm fascinated by, you know, as someone that sits and reads actual books regularly. You know, I came across a book that had was built into an augmented reality platform that I was testing out. And it was a lot of fun. And I thought, I'm going to do something with this technology someday. And so this project presented the opportunity to do so. So it is definitely in the cards and part of what we're dwelling on and doing due diligence on, to release a novel of this story where some of the pages have augmented reality, you know, capabilities. And so the characters pop out, you know, wave your phone over it, and certain things that the book is talking about take place right then, and you can actually view it right then by hovering over the pages. So that's really exciting, and it just came to mind because you mentioned the book aspect. I wanted to mention that.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see. That's kind of like what the future is kind of creating right now, and we're kind of within that future. So if you're able to incorporate it within a book that is kind of, you can see it, you can visualize it while also reading it, etc., that'd be Pretty mind-blowing. And it seems like what you're doing with silos, you're creating kind of a like an ecosystem, I guess, or like you're starting you're creating a story essentially, where you can build other things. Like you don't necessarily need to build NFTs, just NFTs, right? You have the NFTs, and once you have the NFTs, then you could build other thing. I mean, like if this thing blows up, et cetera, you could create games on this. You could create like this is. You're creating a foundation to be able to build so much more on it, is what it seems like to me. So I like the way that you guys are doing it, create the storyline, and then you can build more from it, you know?
That's exactly correct.
With regards to it, returning back to like some basic crypto things. So when is the pre-sale? How do I get, where is the pre-sale? How do I get onto the pre-sale? Will it be like a private pre-sale, or will it have to be whitelisted? And what is going to be the minting price?
So the main like hub of information currently, well, would be in the Discord, but how you reach that would be the website intersilo.com, which is also in my like username here on Telegram for ease. And the mint, so our whitelist, we're calling it mint list, and our mint list is on 317. So March 17th coming up here in a couple weeks. And the public sale is going to be on the 19th. We're pretty liberal at the moment with the mint list. It's not like this absolutely intense grind, in the Discord type of situation. And that has been one of the most challenging aspects of this, is like trying to figure out how to not, because I also agree that like grinding on Discord is a little ridiculous. And I'd love to offer mint list spots for people that actually care about the project. They want to be involved, or they want to hold it. They want to, just see where it goes and just actually provide value in any sort of way. So like when we recognize that, we're giving mint list spots immediately. But of course there is the normal way to just like achieve that, going through the Discord and discovering how to do that would be the best bet. Oh, and mint price. So what we're doing, since we're building, this isn't like a, we took Bored Ape Yacht Club, we reversed it, we mirrored it, we gave it a different gradient, and then we threw some like psychedelic, splotches on the top of it, and now we're gonna mint this thing for like 0.08. So this is actually a company that, needs a budget, and we have, invested in the company ourselves. So the, completing everything or having this entire thing sell out is not necessary to like actually complete our roadmap. We are prepared to build this company regardless. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One very specific one is just to cover our ass as well, because we're not presenting people with something that can be considered a security. This is in fact a product. We're building this company regardless. So I just wanted to put that out there. So we're going to mint at 0.15, which would have been a little extreme, I think, late last year or last year. But with the correction of ETH, I think that it's what we actually need to mint at to make everything super sound. Then I'll also add that I've seen a bunch of projects recently in the 0.25 and 0.4 range, which it's pretty, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's a bit too high. 0.15 seems like a pretty reasonable thing. I mean, if you look at the artwork, if you look at what's incorporated within the artwork, within the ecosystem, it's easily justifiable, essentially, the price that you're putting at.
Yeah, I can give one quick example.
Yeah.
Just we were in a design, I think, PV, you're echoing. There you go. Cool. We were in a design meeting just recently, and we're going through, creating the various traits and actually, creating how they're going to be generated. And it's just like the shadows. There's so much you can zoom in to the shadows on top of like one of the headsets on one of the creatures and determine that the shadow has like a little bit of blue tint in it or something from one of them, right? So like recreating that so it actually works on each one, and then deciding that actually that doesn't look as good as it authentically a shadow would be on this like skin tone, let's call it. So let's just render these differently, and like it's ton more work, but it gives you just like 0.01% more quality, and we're like into that, right? So that's where our head's at.
Yeah, I think Grimlock might be in here. Our artist, it might be cool to kind of hear some words from him about the detail and the amount of work that he puts into these.
Yeah, cool. My name is Grimlock. I can give you guys a little background on who I am. And I'm actually trained as an architect. I have my bachelor's and master's in architecture, and then 2013, I decided to make a career switch to entertainment industry as a concept designer. And I, as Saul said earlier, I worked on Star Citizen for 2.5 years in-house designing spaceships for that project. And after that, I went out freelance and kind of just created my own design business. And I work with tons of different companies, helping them bring their ideas from paper to the first vision, like three-dimensional vision of what that idea is. So a lot of times I get paragraphs of this car should look like this, or this product should look like this, or this robot should have these arms and legs. And then I'm the one that takes that paragraph of words and creates a 3D idea. and so working on this project, Saul and I had started to talk about it back in October, I think is when we started this, early October. And, it kind of grew naturally. The story grew alongside the design of the characters. We had some ideas for the characters to start, but then everything is kind of growing naturally together. And it's actually pretty awesome to see how each one feeds off of each other and then leads to the next decision down the line. Remember in the beginning when Saul's like, we want to do a tiger character. And I was like, dude, fur on a tiger is going to be such a pain, but I was like, all right, we'll make it happen. And so it's like, we never shied away from any of them, challenges of trying to basically, and I think in our minds, create one of the best looking NFT projects out there to date, as far as design, and each character is in a way fairly handcrafted and beautiful. And a lot of, I'm kind of new to the crypto and NFT space. But a lot of times when I, get in on some of these projects and can't wait to see which project, which ape I get, or which whatever, NFT I get revealed to me. And a lot of times I'm kind of disappointed. So I think a big one for me as the designer and the artist on this project is I want every single one of the people who decide to buy one of our NFTs that they're extremely satisfied with the character they get and how beautiful and fun they are to, look at and imagine running around the metaverse with. And then as far as time and effort, this is no joke. It's a lot of work for sure across the board with our entire team of 18 people. I put in about 50, 60 hours of this a week, and it's been since October. So I'm coming up on at least 1,000 hours on my end soon. So, but anyways, it's a little bit of me rambling about the art and stuff.
No, I really like that. You can really see. So even though I ask all these questions on, that seem like I don't know what I'm talking about, I am on your guys's website, the Twitter posts, etc., just so that I can actually feed something. I just want other people to see it. And so one of the Twitter posts is actually a close-up of the detail of all three of these, and you can see just the texture of their skin. Like you said, doing a tiger would be so difficult. Even the lizard, you can see like just that it's very dry and grainy just from the exterior. Or the android, you can see just where the lighting is from just based on how it's angled. I don't know. It's just very, you're good at this, essentially, is what I'm trying to say.
It's definitely my passion. It's definitely why my clients come to me. You know, it's like, and the way that I look at the phase we're at now is like, we're in the concept phase of developing the story and the characters and the creatures. And it's just, you know, the first start to our project here. And these are bringing the 3D designs to life and really telling the story in a visual way. And, you know, that's the first part of our product that we're selling is the original idea of this. And then down the line, we now, you know, we'll be announcing some partnerships and stuff, but we're bringing these things to full 3D character, rigged, animated, ready to run around in different metaverse places that are being created, and different types of play to earn games that are being created. And the cool thing about this is, like, as a 3D concept designer, the work that I create, anytime I pass it on to a client to then go create the final product, the 3D concept is so detailed and figured out that there's no, like, guessing game when it comes to, like, how do we turn this into the next thing. And so it also kind of cuts out the process. Usually concept design is done by drawing and painting, and with the advancement of technology and hardware being a lot cheaper, and the software as well being cheaper and easier to use, 3D concept or 3D design is playing a big role in the design world today. And what it does is it shortens the time between concept to in-game assets. And so once we launch and then we move on to the next step in our process, it'll be a fairly quick turnaround to getting people to start playing and using their 3D avatars. So I think it's super exciting and a lot of fun for sure.
Two really quick additions to that is, he mentioned clients coming to him. The clients that come to him are like Lyft, Ferrari, Ford, Lexus, you know, Falcon Tires, Dunlop, like the list goes on. So I just wanted to mention that. And then, yeah, the second thing is just, you know, I encourage anybody to look at the quality, like, you know, like we were just discussing, if you even see the droids, there's like a little drone like kind of thing floating on top of them over the shoulder, and like the flames that are coming off that actually leave, you know, the light from the flame on specific parts where they actually would be on the droid. And that's just the level of detail that I wanted to draw attention to.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how well you can do this. You must be pretty good with your Photoshop skills or whatever you use to be able to do this.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a mix of 3D, like it's literally 3D design. Then you render it out with like lighting and materials and all this, and then you Photoshop it to even add them. So it's like, it's definitely a big undertaking, big process. And we put in over 260 traits. I think it's actually even more than that. So there's, you're mixing with different color backgrounds, different color paint jobs, different color lights, and then you're also swapping out weapons and hearts and dice and eyes. And it's like, I mean, I don't know. I like I said, I'm kind of fairly new to the NFT and crypto space. My skill that I bring to the team is the art and the design, clearly. But out of the collections I've seen, like usually they have one character. We have three. Like I think sometimes we're like, damn, we made a lot of work for ourselves, and we definitely like have taken note as to where other projects have potentially failed, and we're really trying to not have any of those happen in our project. We're really going for uniqueness, quality, design, and like the collection is gonna have a lot of variation in it. So it's not like, you know, one ape's eyes are closed and other ape's eyes are open. Like that's not ours. Ours are like very easy to spot detail changes that make the whole collection exciting. So it's part of our mission too, you know. It's like, how do we do the next level of an NFT project? And that's what we're doing here for sure.
Yeah. So essentially what you're explaining. Welcome to be to NFTs as well. But essentially what we're experiencing is that crypto was, I don't know, maybe 11 years old, 12 years old, but within the last year, it's just been rapidly evolving, right? And so first it was just projects, then it was just NFTs. And so now we're evolving to NFTs with use case. And so now this is another kind of a evolution stage with Silo Project, in that it's not only NFTs with use cases, it's NFTs with storylines behind them, which then can become use cases. So you're creating an entire ecosystem, essentially, or a foundation behind the silo while encompassing all of that. So I'm pretty impressed with what you guys are doing with regards to evolving this space, essentially.
Yeah, and I think you know, when bringing Solve and Al and the meta level guys, and they're like extremely useful knowledge and in the NFTs and crypto space, and then mixing that with like my art and design passion and skills, you know, I don't know. I think it's definitely become a really beautiful collaboration between all of us, and definitely has blossomed into this amazing project for sure. So, but anyways, I'm going to mute myself now, let you guys talk about something else.
No, you're good. You're good. It's always nice to hear from the artists as well. I have a bunch of questions from the community. I was just wondering, before I go to any written questions, if anybody from the community wanted to ask anything over voice. If you do, just put your hand up. If you don't remember it right now, I can go to the written things and I can come back to you afterwards. But anybody? I guess not. So I know there are some people, I'm recognizing some names here who will probably have questions, but that's okay. Sometimes they don't, their questions come later on. No, that one we already asked. So this one is from Callista Dwine. So it's regarding security. So the question is about security and anonymity. These are both always prioritized by blockchain projects in the development of platforms and technologies. So do you have any solutions or plans to enhance users' trust in these issues of security and anonymity with regards to your token or your NFT project?
So I think I understand where they're going with this, because they could be actually going a few different ways, but the first thing is, like, luckily we don't have to put much trust in the network, right? No one's worried about like Ethereum going down or being hacked or something like that. So we're using like standardized stuff here on Ethereum with token standards that people are familiar with. And then with anonymity, I guess you know, that's up to the user and how they interact with their own NFTs. So certainly, you know, I can't imagine needing to KYC to you know, do anything with the token or the NFT until you hit some sort of like centralized partnership platform that may be working with us in the future. And then, like, if you download an app on your phone or something like that, obviously they recognize who owns the phone unless you've pulled that off anonymously. So I guess I would ask for clarification on the question if that didn't answer it.
No, I think that answered it pretty good. A lot of these people ask questions just because they want an opportunity to win. So I'm not sure if that necessarily.
Hey, I have a question.
Go ahead, AV.
Okay, so the artwork is really good. The use case, you haven't told us about a use case that will help these NFTs increase, not only by, let's say, an NFT art lover wanting to buy it, other than the game and the other than game utility given to it. What other utilities do you have for your NFTs that will keep them functioning as in that will keep them, give them a stable value. Because after mint, people tend to list them at, below the mint price. So how do you plan to get this sorted out with your NFTs?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I have to say is like, value is completely speculative to the holder of each NFT and for any project or anything that you ever buy into. And so ultimately we're creating a product which allows you to use that product in metaverse platforms that we end up partnering with and open metaverse platforms that people can build in. So I think that like when we're looking at this, you know, and I'll take my like Silo hat off for a second and just put my like NFT buyer hat on and say that, you know, when I'm looking at projects and I'm kind of wondering the same thing, I'm just performing due diligence on the team, on the project, on like how they've presented themselves so far. Are they doxed? You know, what's the quality of this? Do I see people being interested in this in a year from now, in 2 years from now? Is this the type of company that would create partnerships in the future that would allow me to have even more utility? Right. So I think we got to like stick with that sort of perspective because it's like just definitely not kosher to talk about like we're going to like hold a certain floor or something like that. But, you know, I can think from my own perspective, this is the type we are building the type of project that I would want to be in on. So I'll say that. And then with utility, you know, luckily, some people in the crowd might be saying these guys are crazy. They're building a game. And I want to like also point out that that's actually not what we're doing here. Luckily, there's a bunch of people working on play to earn games and metaverse platforms that they are not building NFTs for. And so it's like a perfect marriage here where we're building these NFTs and they are compatible with multiple metaverse platforms and multiple play to earn games, specifically with one of the metaverse platforms that we've already partnered with. And so you'll be able to like kind of plug and play with these NFTs and other NFTs in those games. So we're not setting out to do the unthinkable and develop a game that's going to take us 5+ years. You know, we're going to be partnering with those types of games. So there should be plenty of utility in games, in metaverse environments, and also as art in your wallet, right, or on display in your home, and also in augmented reality platforms, especially some of the augmented reality the platforms that are coming out these days, which are promising some pretty incredible stuff. Where companies, so if I'm advising a blockchain company, and have been for years, that is working on a new organization that is partnering with major companies, think McDonald's. And in their platform, it's an augmented reality platform, you're running around doing these different things that's, you know, think Pokemon Go, but like more creative, more interesting. And you end up in like the middle of a McDonald's and you collect this thing or whatever, or you finish this task here. And then it automatically gives you a discount to a burger with fries and a drink if you want it, you know? And it's like McDonald's wants to pay them for that, right? And so there's a lot of like interesting tie-ins to the real world and utility options that could come to be with any of these three-dimensional avatar projects, especially ones with solid teams behind them that are building for the long term.
So you're basically saying that your NFTs are meant for the long-term orders, and let's say you're not gonna waste time building a game that's gonna take years to build. You just want to partner up with major gaming projects that already have the good quality you want to deliver to your community, right?
Yes, that's exactly correct. And not to like say we would never create a game, I'm not putting it off the table completely. It's just certainly not the number one focus. Otherwise, like our community is going to be waiting a long time to like even be able to use these things when we can make this available to them within a year. So like first you have your PFP, your NFT project, and then you have like, as we are developing this thing, it takes a long time to literally design like every single angle that can be imaginable, right? Render these things down in a three-dimensional environment and then make them available to the holders. But that's certainly what we're working on and what we're delivering.
So I wanted to ask about your, how do you plan to manage your token and the NFT sales? Because most projects with token and NFTs, they kind of, let's say, lose the balance between the two space. Let's say the NFT meeting is likely to be affected if the token chart is not going very healthy, let's say, to make more people shy away from your project and, let's say, reduce the minting and maybe cause your project to die. Do you have a strategic plan to keep, let's say, the token and the NFT development? Let's say, how do you want to ensure your investors that you are really here for the long run?
Yeah. So again, the first thing I'll say is like, I was in an interesting spaces earlier just today. And it was like, you know, we have to think about our terminology a little bit. We went through this in 2017 when we're investors, right, in everything. And it's like, we don't actually have to think about ourselves as investors in absolutely everything, right? It might end up working like that, or you might see an increase in value in something you're holding or whatever, but we're also like building things and products, right? Which don't have to be looked at and publicly spoken about as investments. So I just want to point that out. And then I think that there was potentially a misunderstanding. We are not, or have not announced anything to do with, excuse me, a token outside of the token that is the non-fungible token, right? The NFT itself. And so if we announce a token in the future, you can bet that that will tie into our ecosystem and have staking capabilities and things like that, but certainly not what we're talking about and not what we're advertising and not what we are building at the moment. So there won't be a token for now, and there will be a non-fungible token that is from day one of PFP project, from, you know, days after a three-dimensional avatar that holder can use in the metaverse or display in various ways and things like that. So I think that answers your question, because of the we're not releasing a token sort of we're not releasing a token. So I hope that that does, and if it doesn't, please let me know.
Oh yeah, it does. It was just a misunderstanding. Thank you for your time, please.
Awesome.
Great questions.
Thanks, Ify. Yeah. I saw him. I was like, I know he's going to ask some questions, but he's not ready yet, maybe. I have a question here from DeFi Retard. Sorry about his name. So what is the special advantage if I mint early versus minting later on?
Oh, so this is another question I think that could go a couple of different ways, or there's a misunderstanding involved. So minting early, so does that mean like during mint list? So obviously getting mint listed just guarantees your spot as long as you mint within this 48-hour price, right? Or 48-hour time limit, right? And then of course, if you're mint listed, then that's going to help you with your, you know, not being in a gas war. So if this is a popular thing, and during public mint, a bunch of other people are trying to mint, gas will go up. If you're mint listed and you have 48 hours, which in our case is how we're doing it, you are not going to be participating in a gas war. And you can actually just watch gas prices and then pull the trigger when you're ready. Now, this contract is quite popular among some of the best Solidity devs in the world. And it was popularized by Nuclear Nerds. And using Merkle trees, we can actually bring the mint price down. So if, you know, on test nets of a project I was just watching, you know, they were able to mint like 30 NFTs on test net for like $11. It was like absurd. And so you can imagine that this is probably going to be an experience, probably, right? I can't guarantee what the network Ethereum is doing at any given moment. But this is probably going to be a scenario that during the mint list period, you'll be able to mint for something like under $30 in gas, which is pretty awesome. And then I can probably bet that if the project is as popular as we plan on it being because of the quality involved, that during the public mint, it's going to cost a bit more than that, right? So your advantage would certainly be gas and guarantee of a spot.
That makes sense. Best Blue, you have your hand up. Sorry that I should have asked you earlier. You are unmuted if you'd like to unmute yourself because you have to do it twice. Feel free to ask a question. Yeah, you're good. I can hear you.
Okay, cool. This is a cool project. I got put on it by Rengoku. I just checked out the website and the whole art looks really cool. You guys should be proud of that. And then I saw the name of it, Silo, so based off psilocybin, and listening you talk about the feline evolution. That's really interesting. I mean, I've dabbled in psilocybin mushrooms and I've got some profound experiences and some fun experiences too. So I guess this is just a question for the team of, if you've done them, what's your favorite or most profound experiences with psilocybin?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent question. And, you know, part of, I think, what makes me who I am today. And I am very much into studying, you know, psychedelics, and I'm into trying to determine ways that I can achieve higher levels of consciousness and become more self-aware and more calm and in control of my emotions and in assisting in my meditation practice. And so I've, you know, engaged in every psychedelic I could find throughout my life in very calculated settings where I was very comfortable, where I was with proper guides. And I think that those experiences shaped who I am today. And, you know, reading things like Michael Pollan is one of my favorite authors, and he very much speaks regularly about this sort of thing. And then finding MAPS a long time ago, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, and just watching them create these studies across and partner with universities all over to kind of question the status quo about what it looks like in our society with these mental health issues. And then with, you know, us prescribing pharmaceuticals like candy and the long-term effects that that has, instead of using psychedelics in low dosage and controlled environments given to you by a doctor of the medicine, and then having these experiences and then having lifelong impactful changes to your life, and like literally eliminating depression and anxiety from your life from one single, you know, experience that's properly set up on some of these medicines. And I'll just like mention real quick, because the question has spawned it, that like the main motivation for tying in psilocybin into our story was because we wanted to have like a responsible, massive goal if we're going to be having like a massive goal of being a large, like Star Wars style, huge project. Well, we wanted to like say, look, okay, this is in the mainstream. Let's point a spotlight over here at some therapies that can work a lot better than you know, pharmaceuticals can. And why I'm like personally into that isn't just because I have psychedelic experience in my life, but because my daughter, as she turned 11, I saw like a, you know, wonderful, happy, beautiful little girl going to you know, fifth grade, and then I get a call from her school that like I was dead wrong. She was not happy. She was extraordinarily depressed and incredibly anxiety, like crippling, and literally tried to commit suicide with razors at fucking 11 years old. Like, it just blew my mind, right? And so I had to realize that, like, whoa, there's this massive issue going on, and come to find out that, like, her peer group, there was so many kids in therapy. It just like blew my mind, because as an 11-year-old, I was like playing with a Ninja Turtle or something. You know what I mean? It just like didn't dawn on me that I needed to like maybe think about, should I be alive or not? It just wasn't on my mind. So I'm hoping that we can discover these therapies and get them more out in the open, more acceptable, like shedding good lights on these sorts of things so people start to think about them and then ask mm-hmm. their doctor over and over exactly. again. Comes over yeah. reality.
Dang, that's tough, especially as a father. I'm sorry to hear that, but I like where your head's at in terms of where this like future can go with like especially with psilocybin. Like I agree with what you said on pretty much on all points. Like yeah, they prescribe these like prescriptions like candy and just like what it can't be good. It can't be good. And just yeah.
Yeah, I mean imagine being on some of these hardcore pharmaceuticals from like 11 till like you're 35. What does that look like? You know? I don't want to find out.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, exactly. And I feel like the profound experiences you have with even psilocybin, like at least for me, like even though I'm doing this hardcore drug, like that the public would perceive it as, I mean, it is as well. I mean, it's crazy for brain power, but I got this profound experience for about sobriety as like the importance of it and like how, like, yeah, right now I'm like testing the limits with my sobriety. I mean, I'm doing shrooms, but then my just, I was like, there's something so important about grasping onto that and not letting your just like jump into other things, like jump into different prescriptions or trying to self-medicate, jump into alcohol, trying to suppress things. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know. It's something that I found important. So that's I like your guys' stance on that.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And just like, I just realized I'm all hyped up and I, you know, thank you. For like that's exactly what I'm passionate about and why I, you know, we wanted to like weave it into our story so deeply and affectionately.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I'm gonna get rolling off of this, but I like the team, guys. I like your stuff.
Thank you.
Awesome. Good questions, Best Blue. I have a couple more questions. I've got like 20 questions from the community, but let's see. I saw one that was actually pretty good. It was okay. So Lisa Nazilla, sorry, I was trying to find it. Can you tell us more about the story and the different species between the droids, the Tavali, and the Guillemon? What is the conflict between them about, etc.?
Yeah, that's great. So what I like is like the conflict you kind of discover more and more as the storyline goes, but I'll certainly like just skip to the cliff notes here. So, you know, we, like I said, we had this planet that, you know, humans evolved into AI essentially. And really what that looks like is they became extinct. And, you know, the Tavali is like out there, the feline character to the Tavali, which is the hero of our story. They left the planet, you know, thousands of years ago and kind of left shells of what they were doing. So think pyramids. And then as soon as they get out of our current kind of galaxy close to the edge of the universe, they discover there's multiverses, or there is the multiverse. And when they are moving around, they get approached by the Guillemon, and they're this like massive, aggressive, gangster-like reptilian creature with really advanced technology. In fact, they've been ruling the multiverse for tens of thousands of years. So they are used to being kind of like the government, if you will, the enforcers, right? And the Tavali, you know, just achieved consciousness. They developed all this stuff. They just figured out how to leave. And then so they fly out for the first time. And they're on a mission to find out, like, is there more out there, like the silo network back home? Like, how much more, how much, you know, what other levels of consciousness will be achievable if we go travel and explore? And then they run into these galactic gangsters, which kind of like say, you can't do this. You can't travel without, you know, authorization. And they pretty much banish them to a specific place, one planet. And they're like, you have to go there. And then like apply to be able to actually move freely. And they're like, well, this is not what, you know, consciousness is supposed to be like. And then this is actually a sad state of affairs. On that planet, they discover this technology that are a mineral really. And then they build it into this technology that creates a technology called orbital distortion. So the way that the Guillemon, the reptilian creatures, are able to kind of put everybody in their place and track what everybody is doing is by using this massive tool that calculates the frequencies of the multiverse. And so I have an audio engineering background, and there's a thing called noise floor. And this is just like the natural noise around you at any given time. So the universe and the multiverse has a natural kind of noise. You can imagine like planets just simply moving or things colliding very, very far away. And there's just like this general noise floor that exists in the multiverse. If anything spikes above that, well, that tells the Helaman to pay attention and to zoom in on what's going on over there with their equipment. And, you know, the Tavali disturbed this when they went out. They were able to be located. And so they create this technology that they find on this planet and create a technology called orbital distortion, and then use orbital distortion to travel around without the Helaman noticing them because they stay under the noise floor. And when they travel around, they pretty much become legends because this Tavali creature just keeps on landing on different planets looking for additional psilocybin networks or other ways to achieve consciousness. And they become like heroes, and everybody is able to communicate, you know, through other types of technology that you come to find out. But they get this like reputation of just being like badasses, like really like heroic, cool, kind of like celebrity style creatures, because they're able to like escape or get around the Helaman and no one knows how they're doing it. And so the Helaman like keep hearing about the Tavali over and over again for thousands of years, and are just like, they really despise the Helaman. So when the Tavali kind of exhaust their search because they can't find any more psilocybin networks anywhere in the multiverse, they realize that they need to go back to Silo, the planet they call Silo, formerly Earth, and re-access the psilocybin network. And then as they're headed back there, there's a massive collision that takes place. I guess I won't spoil. And when that happens, it spikes way above the noise floor. The Helaman zoom in, they locate the Tavali, they say, you know, so this are basically our nemesis, there they are, you know, they've evaded us for so long, and they start heading towards them. And now the droids that are living on the planet are kind of like, we're innocent bystanders, but now they have a serious issue on their hand. Because the tool that the Helaman use as gangsters is a massive weapon that black holes different planets. So if you like screw with the Tavali, they go there and it's only a matter of time. They reach your planet and they will black hole it. Like they have this weapon that creates black holes, sucks the planet out or the entire galaxy. And that's how they rule, like an iron fist sort of situation. So the droids realize, the Tavali explains, and the droids realize that they're into that, they're actually going to be eliminated as well. And so what ends up actually happening is they join forces, the Tavali and the droids, and then the Helaman, you know, reaches the planet. And I'll leave it there because, yeah, anything else would be like just absolutely spoiling everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am going to have to end this shortly. I'm just wondering if you wanted to finish with anything before I do, and before I do this giveaway.
No, I really appreciate, you know, the time here for sure. And like listening to me just go off for a while specifically about the story. And yeah, we've had a great time explaining it again.
It's really easy to listen to you. Your passion that you have behind this project, incorporating it within it is very, everything just flows really nicely off your tongue. So I'm really happy that you came here, and it's, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah. Thank you again for having us. And again, please feel free to, join our Discord. If you want to learn more, and if you would like to win a mintless spot, I'll be making a little post here in a second for something that you can do. We are a couple weeks out from our mint, so keep an eye on the project. There'll be new developments, new partnerships, and things announced. We are just starting to grow, and we expect our community to get much bigger very soon. So you have found us at an early time. So again, thank you everyone for your participation, and thanks again, Michael and Moonark Snipes. This was great.
Awesome. Thanks, PB. Or thanks, Alan. I really appreciate it. I'm going to share my screen here. I'm going to end this recording. Stop recording.